Zoom so that anyone may show captions to get a real-time transcript.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can,
and wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Is there anyone in their first 30 days? We would like to welcome you.
James, welcome.
On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Is anyone visiting from out of town or new to the meeting?
Hi, Emily. Welcome.
At this time, please silence your cell phones. We respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Forward to the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. We think for them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking A, simple actions. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This evening, we are discussing step four, part two. Please help me welcome Amy from Candlelight. All right, I will read the first paragraph on page 67 and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step four, made a searching and fearless small inventory of ourselves. Notice the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Miss Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our life. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Nick?
Thank you. My name's Nick and I'm an alcoholic.
Nick.
I want to thank Amy and Simple Actions for the opportunity to come tonight. I have a sobriety date, April 21st, 2023, and my home group is Cornerstone. We meet on Saturday nights. So it's going to be right up the street. Kind of crazy to be here today talking about inventory. You know, I sat on this part of the process for quite a long time. Because fear, for me, I knew fear. I've been wrapped with fear all my life. I consider it anxiety, but deep down it's fear. And alcohol for me did a lot of things for me. And it can't, when it comes to fear, this anxiety thing, it was perfect. Something that can kind of free me from myself. And, you know, that not the fear of heights or fear of, you know, things like that, this self-centered fear, this stuff that just keeps me locked up, desire to be loved and wanted and always concerned about what other people are thinking. And that was the power of alcohol for me. That freed me from me and I was able to be a part of the world. But I had a big problem. You know, it not only solved my fear problem, I started using it to do other things and it gets out of control. And by 23 years old, I'm drinking by myself. Alcohol is not removing the fear anymore. It's keeping me locked up and separated. And I ended up, getting sober for the first time in my life at 23 years old. not really knowing what alcohol was or anything like that, is thought if I just stopped drinking, all my problems would go away. And fear, and it's it, and I can look at it in my experience. Fear and willpower kept me sober for a long time. I was scared to live life. I was scared to take chances. And kind of what we read is like it can be a class with stealing. This fear robbed me from life from a long time. You know that when I wasn't drinking. Ultimately, I ended up picking up again, and I had the experience again that I have the allergy of the body. Like I'm always gonna be an alcoholic. I was convinced of that. That's what got me to AA. I was convinced. Whatever I got going on, I don't have the power to solve it on my own. And lucky enough, you guys tell me that's exactly what this program's for. Guys and girls who've lost the ability to do this thing on their own. And I right away I was willing to believe, in something bigger than me. I think more often, or it was easier for me to understand, I didn't believe in myself. So I was open-minded and made this decision in step three to kind of start this journey. And I sat on this inventory process, this step four, for about 8 months. And I the goose hung high. I was full of hope, and I was excited. I felt a part of, and I sat on this step. Specifically, it took me, I'd say, like 2 months per column. And I like how it says. Well, anyway, I finally ended up getting to the fourth column, and that's where, for me, the value of this inventory process really started to come to life. I started realizing, like, I was the one that put myself in these positions. I'm the one that set the ball rolling. I realized, the more and more I do this, like, these resentments, I put them through the process, and it really has nothing to do with who I'm mad at or who I'm bothered with. It all really gets filtered down to this fear stuff. And what really hung me up out of the fear is I thought all my answers were going to be I was all my answers were going to be solved with this fear. If I could figure out this fear stuff, because I knew I understand what it's like to be driven by fear. I base every all my decisions off fear. That's driving me. And I knew this was it. I knew this was the key. I thought I was going to find all my answers with this fear process. The reality is, it did set the train of circumstances in motion. It seemed to cause more trouble, and we're going to get more into it, but I think that's all I got for this reading.
Thanks. I'm Amy and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
Hello. My home group is Candlelight. We meet at 8 o'clock on Friday nights at 1301 Collie Avenue, which is just around the corner from here. So if you haven't been, I highly suggest you come visit us. We're fun. And my sobriety date is September 5th of 2016. So when I think about the fourth step and specifically about examining relationships with people and institutions and all of that, I think back on that time now and I did not realize how afraid of life I actually was. But what that looked like, the context is that I can't control everything around me, and I can't control everything, everyone, you know. And so that line at the end where it talks about being classed with stealing, I'm not sure I've ever thought of it this way before, but I stole like a lot of time, you know. And for me, what that looked like, in addition to drinking and doing all the things that I did to go along with that, you know, and trying to control things around me and trying to control people around me, I drove myself insane and drank myself there as well. I couldn't do anything without some sort of, you know, a drink in my hand, a drink in a drink in front of me at the bar. Like I could not feel comfortable. I did not feel like I belonged. And if you would have asked me about any of that back then, I never would have said that. I didn't realize that. I literally needed this program and those columns to teach me about that. And so what that looks like today for me is a lot of letting go, a lot of looking at little things that happen during the day, and truly understanding like to put each of these things that might go on to that particular test. That's just what I need. And it's okay that I need something like that in my life today. It's okay that I need these columns today. Back at the beginning, I too had difficulty getting through the fourth step. I actually don't remember how long I worked on it though. But I do know that I finished it in the Virginia Beach Psych Center. So that is how long I worked on that. And I had to give myself a little bit of a time out because it wasn't, I mean, it was overwhelming, I think, but in a good way. Looking back on it, I think it was an overwhelming process in a good way. I didn't hate myself, by the end of it. I didn't hate myself through that process. And I actually did have a really good sponsor at the time who, would tell me straight up, how things were. And, I think I got my feelings hurt a little bit too in that process. Of being able to really look and say to myself, I was not a kind person. I wasn't kind to the people around me. I wasn't kind to the world around me. I was extremely, extremely selfish. And that came from, I think, I guess, trying to protect me, just me. Because frankly, none of you mattered. I did. And I'm glad I don't think that way today. And I think that's all I've got.
Continuing on page 68. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. But we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves here in the world to play the role he assigns. We just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear.
Thank you. It opens up. Perhaps there is a better way. I like to point out the paragraph above it. It says, "Self-reliance was as good as it went, but it didn't go far enough." Through this whole process here, I think the fourth step for me, it basically just hammers home this idea of, like, the self-will. Can hardly be a success. It tells me my self-centeredness is the root of my troubles. It's not my drinking. I experienced that. I did a lot of years not drinking, and all this stuff here, it just gets exasperated. I like drinking was my way to relieve me of living like this. It tells me my resentments. I can't wish them away. I can't master them. I gotta have God's help, and it's a different way to, again, this whole process for me, it's leaning me into this decision in step three on why it's such a good idea. For now, we're on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. So again, I got my list. I had a lot of lists of fears. I can think back on it, and a lot of it was just adjectives, different ways to say pretty much the same thing. I was deep down, like, I'm really just scared of being alone. I'm scared of getting hurt. I'm scared of not being good enough. And it all really boils down around what you guys think of me, what you guys, that's what it really boils down to for me. And all these fears, I remember going through them, and I couldn't understand. I had a really difficult time on figuring out why self-reliance failed me, like how self-reliance failed me. And I thought I was going to find all my answers here in this fear inventory. Again, I got through the fourth, the resentment inventory. The fourth column was eye-opening. Again, I realized I'm the problem here. I'm the problem here. And again, I heard someone talk about fear in the meeting, and I knew this was my answer. And I got the only answer I think I really needed, but I didn't know I was looking for. And this idea that self-reliance does not work. Like, that's the answer I need here. If I'm doing this process right, I'm learning that this reliance on me is not working. Let's see here. We're in the world to play the role he's assigned. This is kind of like a vision for, this is my new role in life, Let's see. Paradox in the way of strength. So then we ask again, the way we do the fear, me and my sponsor, we ask ourselves why we have the fear. We ask ourselves, did self-reliance work? Every case it doesn't. And then we get a vision of what God reliance will look like. And we really meditate on that. And then that's kind of how we get the vision. And I like to point out, we can at once we commence to outgrow fear. I don't think we ever fully remove the fear, but I get an opportunity to outgrow it and able to walk through this stuff. I think that's all I got.
Thanks.
So by now I'm starting to build this relationship with this God of my understanding. And I was one of these people, one of those people who really don't even know why, thinking back on it. But the word God, I allowed that to bother me for some strange reason. But God never did anything to me. Like, the universe, as I understood it, didn't, hit me with a lightning bolt or anything like that. I actually grew up, like in church and going to like some of the best memories of my life are being at church camp and being, like fully involved in that, what that looked like basically. But I was one of those people that, like in my big book, I was trying to basically think of a different word. And so there are some pages, maybe like two pages in my big book, where I've crossed out the word God and written like, the universe or the spirit of the universe or a creator or something like that. And I very quickly, like the point of that exercise, I think, was that I could call it whatever I want to call it, but the meaning is still the same. And I am very lazy. And so I quickly just like gave that up and God became the word and it's fine. But the basis of trusting and relying upon God and, having that the trust and the faith that things are going to work out, that this is going to be okay. I'm going to be okay not only through this process, but, further down the road. And I love the part where it says, that we humbly rely on him and then we're enabled to match calamity with serenity. I love the word calamity. Chaos is still fun. I'm not gonna lie. I still feel that way. Getting spun up, it can be great. But I cannot let myself get so far down that I am only focused on what this is doing for me, whatever this is, and like what this is doing for me. How am I being prepared through this process to be able to be useful for other people? Like that is the point now. And so in some ways, I don't have time to be scared on certain levels. I have a job to do, I have a role to play. And again, like without this program and without the steps, I would not have the relationship that I do today with a God of my understanding. And I don't think that I hope I'm useful in the world, but I don't think I would be quite as useful in the world if I didn't have, you know, this program to rely upon and participate in. And the part where it says that all men of faith have courage, the verdict of the ages is that faith means courage and all men of faith have courage. I do things today that I never would have done, like this currently, what I'm doing right now. I mean, I could have stopped drinking and that would have just been the end of it. But instead, for me, I think I feel a certain amount of courage as I move through the world today. And I do things that make me feel uncomfortable, but I know I'm going to be okay. I don't need a drink to sit here. Well, I mean, I have coffee, but I don't need a drink to sit here and talk about my experience. And to let it be known that, you know, I don't do this perfectly. And that's okay also. And the part about, being directed to my purpose, you know, in this world. I talk again, or, you know, I think again, rather, about like that control that I have to work to let go of, that trying to be in control of everything. And it reminds me my relationships with people today, what they look like. I'm not trying to influence the way that people feel about me. I try to be as authentic as I possibly can be because I'm okay. Like I am what I am. And I think about my family, and even in the past, having tried to control, not knowing it then, but like trying to control how they saw me. And it's like some really warped ideas about how I wanted to be seen by my family. Like I grew up pretty supported. Like, you know, I have a very loving family, and even through the process of getting sober, they were in my corner. But it was like, it's you might not be enough thing. And they didn't put that on me. I put that on me for some reason. You know, I don't think it gave me an excuse to drink. I think I liked to drink because I liked to be drunk. But I think about now and going through the inventory process and looking at my relationships with my family members, and again, kind of putting some of that trust back in them to, you know, for them to decide on their own how they were going to see me, and that there's really not a lot I can do about it. So that's it.
Thanks, Amy. Continuing on page 68, now about sex. Many of us needed an overall hauling here. There. Wow. But above all, we tried to be sensible in this question. It's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to the extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see significance everywhere. One school will allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? Nick?
Yeah. What can we do about them? Again, I like to point out, you know, through this inventory process, it's saying we need God's help everywhere. I need God's help everywhere. And we're going to start going through and identifying, you know, areas of self that, you know, our conduct. It is easy to get way off track. I remember, when I came to AI, I was in a relationship, and I had a, it was like, it was like the first 30 days, and I was talking to my sponsor about like 30 minutes, kind of just going on and on and on. And he finally said, oh, I don't get into that. And I don't think, I think I, again, I didn't, I understood the mission here. Like I, we're not in to get in. That can get off track if like that is what we're getting off track for. So it was kind of adamant, like, or it was, you know, the standard was set early on, like, we're not here to get into that. We're not here to get off track. But I needed an overall in here, in this category. I mean, it was explained to me this process here, the fear, the sex, the resentment, this is a one big web that I'm trying to spread over my life and try to get an understanding of how I'm conducting my life up to this point. How I'm living life on my own, living life selfishly. Again, I know I'm not unique. I came in here didn't thinking I was not that selfish. But it's killing me. Like this process here, again, I gotta say it's hammering home. Like I'm seeing it clear in my life, you know, what my life looks like on my own, relying on myself, and I just cause a mess. I've only had two relationships for 4 years apiece. We'll kind of get more into the conduct here, but during both those relationships, I was drinking on and off, and then I had a long stretch of dry time that I didn't. Basically, I was just kind of on little mini quests everywhere. I was not in any serious relationship at that point. I was just full of fear. I was scared of getting, you know, we got, you know, we kind of went over the fear, but you know, this fear, this idea that fear touches everything and I'm driven by it, like this, in this area of my life, is there's absolutely. And so I guess we'll get more into that. Let me see if there's anything else. But yeah, this paragraph's kind of, I didn't have much on this paragraph. It's kind of just saying both sides of the spectrum. And again, we're not here to be arbiters of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems, so that's good news for you and me. We would hardly be human if we didn't. Let's see. Yeah, I think that's all I got on this reading.
Thanks. You said the word conduct, and that is, yeah, I did not have good conduct when it comes to thinking about sex, thinking about the kinds of relationships that I had, the kind of situations that I put myself in, and the fact that I would use people in whatever way possible to get whatever I wanted to get. And so there's that end. But then the other side of that is, God, I really want people to like me. Like deep down, like I really want people to like me. And that, you know, for me, that was a do anything I have to do kind of a situation. Just like, that's why it goes hand in hand for me with my drinking and, you know, my behavior and any other kind of, you know, use, right? Like I used everything to make myself feel better. I used everything and everyone to, I don't know, just to try to feel, period. Right. Like that was a big thing for me. And I think it's a really, well, I don't know. What I think really doesn't matter. It says right here that we are not the arbiters of other people's sex lives. And, you know, I am not, I can get real judgy real fast. And not it, about myself, not just other people. I mean, I can get really, really wrapped up in trying to, again, make people do what I want them to do because it is all about me. And I, you know, and I, in thinking about how, what it looked like the first time that I did, you know, an inventory and the sex inventory and, you know, the thought in my head, like, wait a minute, you're telling me I have to write down like, you know, all these people and all this re these relationships, and talk about or write about and think about like what I did, and you know, and my behaviors. That probably was one of the most heartbreaking experiences through this whole process, was like really being like, oh yeah, I hurt a lot of people. And this is where that really came to life for me, was hurting people, hurting other people's relationships, hurting myself, hurting my own relationships. And I even had to go back a second time. You know, the part in there where it says that you go over it and make sure that you did a thorough job and all that kind of stuff. Well, I forgot a lot of stuff and a lot of people, and I had to go back and write that again. And that was freaking embarrassing. But I'm glad. Like, I'm glad that I did it. I'm glad I had the opportunity to examine these behaviors, because I don't behave that way anymore, in relationships with people. I don't behave that way, you know, when it comes to my personal relationships. I don't try to hurt other people. I do consider other people, you know, having adult conversations about certain things. I mean, if you would have asked me, you know, 15 years ago, if I thought that I was going to be having the kinds of conversations that I was having with people about our personal relationships, there would not have been a chance in the world. Most definitely not. But in order to continue to be the person that I want to be in the world, which is a person who is of service, I hold myself to a higher standard when it comes to examining my relationships and examining, you know, is somebody going to get hurt in this situation? That's the question. You know, and I'm able to turn myself away from making bad decisions that, you know, frankly, I don't really want to call people and have to like make amends, because again, I'm pretty lazy. So I don't know. That's really all I have to say about this part two, I guess.
Now on to page 69. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? And we had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. Nick.
Sorry, I just blacked out there. Shit, I had everything I was gonna say. Let's see here. We reviewed our. Yeah, again, this pro I remember this process. Again, I didn't realize how much I relied on human power to fix me, make me feel better. And I think in relationships specifically, you know, in this context, that ease and comfort, you know, I think. Again, it was apparent to me. The dishonesty, I sold a guy all the time that I'm not. Like, that was my favorite thing to do. I did that everywhere. I did that at work. I did that with my family. I did that with everywhere, and especially in this instance, all because I was scared to really be who I am or show you who I am. Again, the fear, it all boils down to fear. And this idea, like, that kind of sets the ball rolling. And then I got to kind of, and this is all just to kind of get what I want, right? And, you know, the selfish aspect of this part, And my past relationships, you know, I make everything about me. I do everything I want, and, you know, if you don't, I'll make your life hell. That's kind of how I did things. But yeah, this idea, like, again, I set the ball rolling. I'm selling this guy. I'm not. I say things that I can't live up to. I'm selling this perfect Prince Charming, and I can't live up to it. And that's again, this idea that I put myself in this position. I didn't really consider how inconsiderate I am. Again, I thought I was a nice, again, this nice guy, doing things, but I really just wanted things in return. And another glaring habit that I have is I have the inability to kind of break things off, get out. You know, I have a hard time being honest. You know, and I have these relationships kind of drag on, and that causes a lot of harm. And what I do is, I want you to break it off, so I start acting a certain way. I know that's horrible to say out loud, but that's me. That's me on my own. That's me on my own. But again, like this idea, like what can I do if instead, like if we really consider that, like, well, the first thing is to be honest, and that's a glaring. And I didn't think I was that dishonest, but dishonest, be considerate. Let's see, and then we start shaping the same ideal. That's kind of the same thing I was just mentioning. You know, basically anything I should have done instead is basically the ideal. It didn't have to work out that way. God given, neither. Remember that. Let's see what else I got on this. Yeah, and again, it's a reminder. I mean, we ask God to mold these ideals and help us live up to them. I don't have the power to live up to it on my own. Again, this process is not this inventory, this fourth step. I was scared of it, man. Believe me, I was scared of it. I avoided it. I was hoping I didn't have to do it, but I was ready to drink again. The insanity was creeping on me, man. And I the clock was ticking, and I had to have a psychic. I had to start. I haven't had a psychic change yet. This is when it started happening for me. Again, it was apparent. Like everything in my life, my resentments, all these fears, you know, all the sex conduct. I, on my own, I'm not doing well. I'm not doing well. The self-reliance is killing me. We had to have God's help. I think that's the whole point, you know, this idea that I can never remove this fear. I can only help outgrow it. You know, this resentment, I gotta master it. But how, you know, the self-centeredness, I needed his help. If I didn't need his help, I don't know. If this stuff was just fixed for me, I wouldn't need to do any of this work. I think the power of the work, you know, we talked about this on Sunday. Like I get a resentment, and I grind it out through the process. And I'm a guy that lives in columns one and two. I'm knowing who I'm mad at and why. I got all this fear, and I'm driven by it. I don't know why. I'm running from things. I'm scared to death. You know, these relationships. I no wonder my life's a mess. It's based off self. It's based off this delusion that I think I need to be this certain guy for you to like me, and I sell this guy that I'm not. No wonder my life's a mess. And for me, I can't live like that. I wish, you know, I know some people, I know you guys know, like, who do not give a F about pissing people off or screwing people over. I can't live like that. I don't know about y'all, but I can't live like that. And living this way, selfishly, I've experienced it even in sobriety, of living selfishly in this aspect of my life. It blocks me off. It doesn't feel good to use people. And again, it's a reminder. Our sex powers were God-given, and therefore neither to be used lightly or selfishly. Yeah. I think that's all I got on this one. Thanks.
Thanks. So I get to this part of the book, to this part of the inventory, and I read that that I have sex powers, which are God-given, that I am supposed to use for good and not for evil. That makes the most sense to me. Very, I don't know, lightly put. And it made sense because up until that point, I had, again, the conduct was just not great at all. And going forward, I'm not supposed to behave like that anymore. I learn a lot about my behavior, and I'm reminded that this drinking and all of the things that I did, along with the drinking, that is but a symptom. There are underlying things that are going on. And yes, at the end of the day, when I ended up in the room, and I say ended up in the rooms because I started in a different room, complaining about a relationship, as a matter of fact. And and then I was politely escorted into the AA room because I was at a meeting, and the meeting had the Alateen and the Al-Anon and the AA all at the same time. And I was in one room, and it was softly suggested that I move over to another room. And here I sit today. And so I get to this part of the inventory, right? And I understand that going forward, it's not just now in this, that very first inventory I ever did, because I've done more than one inventory, more than one sex inventory, fear inventory, all of that. And I understand that in order to go forward, I also have to look at what my next relationships are going to look like. I have to look at, is this selfish? Is this, am I being dishonest? Am I being inconsiderate? Because I can ask myself, did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Yes, I did. And did I do it on purpose? Yes, I did. And again, it all goes back to this I'm not comfortable with me. I don't even know it, but I'm not comfortable with me. And so I make bad decisions. And a lot of times, in order to facilitate those bad decisions, which, it was like a byproduct. I wanted to get drunk. And at the end, I could not stop drinking and making bad decisions. This process, in looking at relationships, it really starts to break it down for me. Nick had talked about like having this like the spiritual experience of this program and having this psychic change. And I can relate, that this is where it started to happen for me as well. So that's all I got.
Continuing on page 69. Whatever ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. Nick.
Again, we're this process is starting to swallow some hard truths. We'll get that in the next reading. I got it, and I'm willing to, I'm again, this whole process, the first 60 pages, I'm realizing how this willpower is defeating me. I'm gonna, live in this selfish life. I'm gonna drink again. What I'm saying is I'm becoming more and more willing. At this point I'm developing a prayer life. I'm seeing the benefit of this process. I'm realizing, my self-reliance is what's killing me. It's nothing else. This self-reliance is killing me, and I'm willing to grow to be a better man. And you guys you know, the steps give me a direction, a path forward. I do like the line, we treat sex as we would any other problem. I when I think of that, I, you know, I think, you know, we grind it out through the process. We look for our selfishness, our self-centeredness. You know, whether it's a resentment, we look through, you know, the fourth column, and we grind it through. We have a process for all this stuff. And I don't know about y'all. I need a process. I don't, before AA, I was just kind of just flailing around here, like not even knowing what is wrong with me. Some days are good, some days are bad. I don't know why. I'm clueless. And if you, Nick, what's wrong? I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with me. But you guys give me a direction, and I point out we treat sex as we would any other problem. I remember calling my sponsor, like, should I take this job? He's like, I don't know about the job. Like, I don't. Let's talk about the fear. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the spiritual actions, right? It's not, I think that's what it's saying here. We treat it like any other problem, any other spiritual, but the spiritual solution. That's what this is kind of telling me here. In a minute, yeah, we ask, we should, you know, we ask God. And again, this paragraph is telling me, ultimately, let's be honest. Let's grind the process out with, and share it with a sponsor. But ultimately, let's pray about it. That's how you start cultivating a understanding, a growing understanding, and you start getting inspired, and then you start walking this stuff out. And for me, like, the idea of walking fears out, and, like, you know, again, this idea, like, with the resentments, I know we talked about it last week, but, like, I'm mad at somebody, and I get down all the way down to the fear, to the root, to the truth. And I don't know, I'm really grateful for that. And it's crazy. I delayed this. I delayed it, and I prolonged the pain and suffering of just being out in no man's land in AA, just getting closer and closer. I delayed it for what? I was holding on to a dead life. I thought I had a better way to do things, and I don't. I don't know. And I started having an experience, and I start relying on a higher power, and it's thanks, it's and I'm thankful to the process. I think that's what that kind of is telling me. Let's consult someone we trust, but let's rely on a higher power. That's all I got.
It talks about the amends, not process, but it mentions amends right here where we have done harm, provided that we don't bring about still more harm in doing so. And that sounds a little bit familiar. You know, I learn that, first of all, I'm not going to every single solitary person or situation that I have listed on this list. The biggest amends that I learn is acceptable is to just leave things alone. Just don't talk to that person, because even going back around that person, speaking about relationships specifically, like going around that person will be hurtful, will be harmful. Also, people don't really want to hear from me. Not everybody wants to hear from me. That's also, you know, I had to learn that what I have to say might really not be all that important. The thing I do remember, though, is that if an opportunity like presents itself for me to address something, that I should be willing to do it. But I have also learned that I should not just put my foot in my mouth, that I should probably seek counsel with other people about ha how to handle certain situations. And that's okay. I mean, it goes on to say counsel with persons is often desirable, and that's but we let God be the final judge. You know, thank God that people in this program are supposed to avoid hysterical thinking and advice. Because I don't know what that would like look like for me. For me, that's a slippery slope. Don't give me that kind of power. Don't let me think that I have control. About that kind of thing, even in my own, I mean, and I'm talking about like in my own life, like really, I do have to consider, you know, what my ideal is going to turn out to be. And it says that I can be willing to grow toward it. I don't have to be perfect, right off the bat. In fact, I don't have to be perfect at all. also thank God for that. And thinking about, you know, where I have done harm in the past, in trying to, it's not really make up for it. I'm not trying to make up for things because, I mean, people have made amends to me, and it's not really like a making up process when it comes to like healed relationships. It's about like growth and building. And I've had to let go of a lot of relationships through that process as well. And that's okay. I think that's all I have on that.
Thanks. And our last reading is on page 70. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into work and helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. In this book, you will read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you have already made a decision and inventory of your grosser handicaps, you've made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. And about 2 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, just like that solemn reminder, you know, if sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves in the harder into helping others, you know. In working with others, it says, you know, nothing so much ensures immunity than intensive work with other alcoholics. So a reminder, that is my purpose today, is my usefulness to others. And specifically alcoholics, because I'm an alcoholic. And I've found a new way to, live. The last paragraph, yeah, I remember this has been true to me. Like this, the faith did for us that we could not do for ourselves. Again, I'm having an experience. I can't believe I got at this point in the book. I'm realizing I'm doing things, and I'm realizing I'm doing things that I've never done before. And I realize I'm not doing it alone. Something's doing something for me, and it's apparent because I remember thinking I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And I finally got it done. Again, we hope you're convinced now that God removed whatever self-will has been blocking you. Again, yeah, the process for me just reminded me, you know, the self-will, the self-reliance is what has been defeating me. And, you know, again, at the end of this, it just was apparent how good of a decision step three is for me. And I don't see it in step three. I only see it at the end of step four. And I love the, this reminder, you've only made a good beginning. I remember we're only willing to believe that's the beginning, right? They told us back then. And I can say, that's the beauty of this. It's only a beginning of a lifetime of this walk of life with y'all. I really believe that. Through this process, I swallowed a lot of hard truths about my big truth, chunks of truth about myself. But I even did yesterday when I did this process. So the process is always growing and growing, and I'm very grateful for that. So thank you.
Thanks. So it says we earnestly pray. Like for me, earnestly is a strong word there. Like we earnestly pray for the right ideal. And for me, I pray and ask for guidance that, you know, that I love myself enough, I guess, to remember that I have that ideal and to not, you know, to not bend on certain things, because I had a really bad habit of, you know, putting myself to the side in favor of what I thought somebody else needed, even when I wasn't right about that. And, you know, it says If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves harder into helping others. Like for me, what that looked like at the beginning was trying really hard to put myself in that version of timeout and just stay away from people and like not like understand what a relationship is supposed to look like. I learned what dating is when I came to AA. That was interesting, learning that you just, didn't meet somebody at the bar and then 6 months later you're still like together or whatever. That really was, I thought everybody did that. They do not. Not everybody does that. I think about the relationships that I have with people today or that I've had with people today. And, I'm grateful to have had some good relationships where I did have the opportunity to take a look at what might happen. Never would have occurred to me before. And believe it or not, I really don't think that I would without a relationship with something that is greater than me, giving that whatever it is, the wheel. I don't think that I would be where I am today, when it comes to how I think about relationships with other people. So yeah, having swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself, yeah, that is for sure. So that's it.
Nice.
Right, we'll go ahead and pass the baskets. Thank you to Amy and Nick. You guys did a great job. The seven traditions states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group rent and other expenses, the seven tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps A free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to a fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements? Okay. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Literature is available. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship is yours. NA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me or email info@simpleactions.net. Smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. All are encouraged and invited to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Cafe Stella's. And please help me thank Amy and Nick again. Yeah.
Alcoholic David.
David.
It's too early to announce the next two events coming up at Simple Actions because we never announce them inside of 30 days. But in February, we got two things coming up, and I'm not announcing it. But there are flyers on that table over there, stacks of two flyers. They're yellow ones and blue ones. Please grab them, take them back to your home group. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Thanks to all who participated. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to say thank you to Amy and Nick. And Amy has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Amy.
Amen. Amy,
our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
And we pray with closing. A moment of silence for those still sick and suffering. Followed by the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory. Forever. Amen.